Osho, The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 11. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
The first question. Bhagwan, I have fallen in love with a woman I had divorced 2 years before. Is it possible? Sratham, man is almost a machine. Man is not yet man. He functions unconsciously. He lives in sleep. Hence, everything is possible. In fact, you always fall in love with the same woman, even though apparently you fall in love with somebody else. But the type is the same, because your liking is the same, your mind is the same, your choice is the same. Just watch people, watch their love affairs, and you will be surprised. It is always the same man or the same woman. Yes, with a different face. Are with a different mask. Different clothes. Different shape and size. But these differences are not real differences. Unless you are new, how can you fall in love with somebody new? Who is going to choose? How one is going to choose? The same mind will like the same type of face, the same eyes, the same color, the same shape, the form, the way the woman walks, the way she talks. And again, within few days, you will be tired, just as you were tired before. Again, you will find you are trapped, imprisoned, and the woman will also find the same thing. But man lives in such an unconscious state that you cannot expect more than that. If man is conscious, then many things become impossible. In the first place, falling in love itself becomes impossible. You start rising in love, not falling in love. The very quality of your love becomes totally different. It is no more a relationship. It is more a state of your being. You are full of love. You share your love. But there is no demand on your part. It is no more a business. It is no more conditional. It asks nothing. It is simply thankful that somebody accepted, that somebody did not reject your love. You feel grateful. It is not a bondage for the other. It does not enslave the other. It is not possessive. It is absolutely non-possessive, unconditional, undemanding. It gives freedom. And when love gives freedom, lovers start soaring high. They start moving towards God. Love becomes a door to the divine. Right now, love simply drags you downwards. Falling in love is a meaningful phrase. You certainly fall. You gravitate downwards. In the beginning, you may feel great, but only in the beginning. That is just infatuation. Because you are hoping something new is going to happen. In the beginning, you are excited. It seems a great adventure. But soon you find it is the same old rotten thing. Nothing is special, nothing new. Just the partners have changed, but the game is the same. And pledge with the same violence, with the same ugliness. Sradhan, it is not only you who have fallen in love with the same woman. Everybody is doing that. In the ordinary unconscious state of humanity, more than that cannot be hoped. You were fortunate that you got divorced. But it is difficult to live alone, unless you know the beauties of being alone. The moment you are alone, you start suffering from loneliness. You start hankering the company of the others. And then anybody will do. Even the same woman that you had divorced. It is better than to be lonely. Even if it is miserable, people would prefer misery as a company rather than be lonely. Unless one knows the joys of meditation, one cannot avoid falling in love. Once you start enjoying your own being, the joy, the space, the absolute freedom, the unhindered consciousness, nobody occupying your attention, nobody trying to catch your attention, nobody impinging on your freedom, interfering with your freedom, when you start enjoying your aloneness, you have become a meditator. Yes, love will also be possible after that, but a totally different kind of love. You must have been suffering from loneliness and finding the same woman again. You may have thought it is better to be with her than to be lonely. And you must have forgotten all the miseries. People's memories are very sad. And this has to be understood. The mind tends to forget the miserable part. It tends to remember the pleasurable part. That is one of the strategies of the mind to remain in control, to remain your master. It always tends to forget the misery. It goes on magnifying, enhancing, decorating the pleasurable part. Reality is totally different. But the mind lives in imagination. And your memories are not reliable at all, because your memories are fictitious. You just think how beautiful it was. You have forgotten all the misery. You only have chosen few moments that may have been beautiful. There must have been few moments which were beautiful. But only few moments, far and few in between. And they cannot be so beautiful as you are thinking. Otherwise, where the need was to divorce the woman? The misery must have been much more. The pain must have been too much, unbearably too much. You must have suffered too much. The woman must have suffered too much. It is not a question that the woman is at fault or you are at fault. It is simply two unconscious people being together are bound to create misery for each other. If you cannot be happy alone, how you can create happiness for anybody else? You yourself are not happy. How can you give happiness to the others? You can give only that which you have. You are miserable. You can pretend that you are not miserable. But how long? The honeymoon cannot last forever. Within a week or at the most 2 weeks, it is finished. And then you know that both are miserable people. And when two miserable people live together, misery is not only doubled, remember, it is multiplied. But you forget all that. Later on, you efface those parts which were miserable. You preserve the beautiful moments. And not only you preserve, you go on decorating them, painting them again and again. Slowly, slowly, they have no relationship with the reality. Your past is fictitious. Your future is fictitious. Only your present is real. But you don't live in the present at all. Either you live in the past or you live in the future. And why this question has arisen, Shraddhan? Misery must have started again. That's why you are asking, is it possible? You have done it, and you are asking me, is it possible? You cannot believe yourself now what you have done. When people are together, they want to be alone. When they are alone, they want to be together. People are impossible. Middle-aged Rizzoli sat on the front steps weeping bitterly. "What's the matter for you?" asked his neighbor, Pasquale. "Bonaocchi's wife just died," said Rizzoli, wiping his tears. "So what?" said his neighbor. "She was a no-blood relative of yours." "I know that," says Rizzoli. "It is a jester that everybody seems to have a good luck but a me." When you are with someone, immediately 1001 problems arise which were not there before. When you are alone, those problems disappear, but a new problem arises. The loneliness seems to be so empty. You feel at a loss. You don't know what to do. Soon you start forgetting all the misery that was coming out of your relationship. You start hankering for another relationship. Maybe this time it is going to be different. Maybe she has changed. Maybe you have changed. Maybe both have learned from the experience. Harry and his girl, Francesca, were on the coach watching an old Raya Rogers movie on TV. As Raya rode through a pass, Harry said, "I will bet you a screw his horse steps in a gopher hole and falls." "Okay," said Francesca, "you are on." Sure enough, the horse stumbled. After the bet was paid in full, Harry said, "I ought to tell you, I saw the movie before. That's how I knew." "So did I," said the Italian girl. "But I didn't think a horse be dumb enough to fall in the same hole twice." But man is more dumb. Now make the best of it. When you have fallen in the hole, try to make a home there. You are an American. And the only religion the American believes is try and try and try again. The second question. Bhagwan, I cannot understand you. I have tried hard but failed. What should I do now? Govindo, is there a need to understand me? What is understanding? It is an intellectual effort. What I am trying to communicate to you has nothing to do with the intellect. You can feel it, but you cannot understand it. You can live it, and only by living it you will be able to understand it. But people try just the opposite. First they want to understand. The idea is, unless we understand a thing, how can we try it? How can we live it? It is logical that first one should understand and then only one should try to live. But life is not logic. Life is far more deeper than logic. And many times life is absolutely illogical. If you try to cling to logic, you will miss many things. And those many things are the most precious. You will miss love. You will miss meditation, you will miss joy, you will miss God, you will miss freedom, you will miss all that makes life significant, that gives life beauty, splendor. You will miss the presence of godliness that surrounds you. Logic is a barrier, not a bridge. And Govindo, you say, I cannot understand you. You must be trying from the head. It is a heart-to-heart communion. If you want to misunderstand me, then the head is the right instrument. Then you can go on misunderstanding me forever and forever. But if you want to understand me, then you have to forget all about your old patterns of understanding things. It is not mathematics that I am teaching here. It is not philosophy that I am teaching here. I am teaching something absolutely existential. You have to live it. You have to take the quantum leap. You have been told again and again that before you take the jump, think twice. And what I am saying to you is, take that jump first and then think as many times as you want. Because then thinking cannot do anything. It cannot harm. But let the jump happen first. Meditation has to be experienced. If you try to figure it out, what it is, you will miss the point. Because it is not a question of mind at all. Meditation means a state of no mind. I am constantly pulling you towards the state of no mind in every possible way. What I am doing here is absurd. It is not logical. You will have to put the logic aside. Otherwise, I will say one thing and you will understand something else. The judge asked the philosopher who was produced in the court, "Now tell me, sir, why did you park your car where you did?" The professor said, "There was a sign saying, 'Fine for parking.'" Put your intellect aside and remember, I am not telling you to put your intelligence aside. On the contrary, if you can put the intellect aside, you will be far more intelligent. Because intelligence and intellectuality are not synonymous. They are antagonistic. Intelligence is a clarity. Intellectuality is nothing but a clouded state. Intellectuality means you are too much knowledgeable. Your knowledge goes on interfering. Your mind is continuously interpreting. Your mind is judging. Listen to me without any judgment. I am not saying agree with me. There is no question of agreement or disagreement. Just listen. When you go to the mountains and you listen to the sound of a waterfall, do you agree with it or disagree with it? You simply listen. When you listen to beautiful music, do you agree or you disagree? There is no question of agreement or disagreement. Listening is non-judgmental. Hence the critics go on missing many things. If a critic goes to listen to the music, his listening is not total. He is constantly comparing, judging, interpreting. One has to be very non-critical. One has to be just open, vulnerable, receptive, silent, so that whatsoever is happening can penetrate to the deepest core of your being. If you are full of your own mind, Govinda, you are going to misunderstand me. That is bound to happen. Miss Jokovski, an attractive redhead, got on a crowded bus and stood near a young fellow. The lad, thinking of giving his seat to her, looked up and said, "How far? You got your nerve?" snapped the police girl. "Would I ask you how long?" If you are carrying something in your mind, if you are preoccupied, then whatsoever you hear is not what is being said, is what you are capable of hearing. Quiz master, "Lady, for $50, tell me who was the first man on earth?" "Lady, Adam." "Quiz master, right. Now for $200, tell me Eve's first words when she met Adam." "Lady," is stuck for an answer, turns to the quiz master and says, "Gee, that's a hard one, is not it?" "Quiz master, give this lady $200. Govindo, don't remain preoccupied with your own thoughts. You must have come with great knowledge. You must have come with conceptions of your own. And you are listening through a jungle of your own ideas. What I am saying is very simple, utterly simple. My statements are absolutely ordinary. I am not a holy man. I am not a saint. I am far more ordinary than you are. I have no speciality about me. I don't exist at all. How I can be special? So my statements are very simple. A child can understand. But you can go on missing. On a Third Avenue bus in Manhattan, a very prim spinster was sobbed over hearing Scarpetti, the immigrant, saying to his friend, "Emma come first, I come next, two Essa come together, I come again, two Essa come together again, I come out once more, pee pee twice, then I come out for the last time. When his scar patty was finished, the crimson-faced old maid turned to a policeman sitting nearby. Are not you going to arrest that terrible old man? She whispered. Why? Asked the policeman. For spelling Mississippi? Let me repeat. Emma comma first. I comma next. Two Essa comma together. I comma again. Two Essa comma together again. I comma once more. Pee pee twice. Then I comma for the last time. You ask me what should I do? I have tried hard but failed. Now please don't try hard. In fact, stop trying. Drop trying. Just listen for the sheer joy of listening. The wind passing through the pine trees. Listen. The sound of running water. Listen. The birds singing in the morning. Listen. Don't try to understand. And just by listening, something will start reaching to your heart. A song, a dance will start happening. Your heart will start opening up like a flower, and great fragrance will be released, and that will be real understanding. Govinda, you have been unnecessarily trying hard. Relax with me. Don't try hard. If you try hard, you will be tense, and there is no possibility of understanding me through tension. Relax, rest. I am here to teach you relaxation and total rest. Understanding is going to happen, but not through the head. It is going to happen through the heart. Not through logic, but through love. The third question, Bhagwan, why is creativity so painful? Prem Sarva, creativity is the highest peak of your consciousness. Hence, it is painful. It is arduous. You are going uphill. To be uncreative is very comfortable. It is a downward journey. You need not do anything. Nothing is needed on your part. Just the gravitational pull is enough. When you are coming from the hill towards the plains, you can just put your car engine off. No gas is needed. The car will go on rolling down. But if you are going uphill, then effort is needed. Great effort is needed. Creativity needs the greatest effort. Because many things have to be dropped when you are moving upwards. Unnecessary weights have to be dropped. And you are carrying so much luggage. It is all unnecessary. It is useless. But people go on collecting. People are great collectors. Any kind of rubbish, and they will collect, hoping that maybe someday it can prove of some use. They are greedy and they feel empty, so they go on stuffing themselves with every kind of thing. You are so full of ego, and ego is a great weight. You cannot move upwards. You will have to put the ego aside, and that is the greatest pain. To be a creator means you drop the very idea that I am separate from existence. Creation happens only when you are one with the existence. Creation happens only when you are so in tune with the Creator that there is no disturbance from your side. And the greatest disturbance comes from the ego. It nourishes on the disturbance. It lives on the disturbance. Ego means the idea that I am separate. And if you think you are separate, you are living in a lie. And creativity flows out of the experience of truth. You have to know the truth that you are not separate. No man is an island. We are all part of one vast continent. The whole existence is one. It is one organic unity. Hence, all that is great has come out only in those moments when the Creator was dissolved into the whole. Great paintings, great poems, great music, great dance, all happens only when you are dissolved. When you are no more. If you are, suddenly you become the block. You stop the flow. Then God cannot use you as a flute. He cannot sing on you. The flute has to be just a hollow bamboo. Just an open space. Just a vehicle. The great poets, the great musicians, the great dancers are all vehicles. They don't dance. They are being danced. They don't sing. Some unknown energy sings through them. That's why creativity is painful. because nobody wants to melt and merge and dissolve. We cling to our identity. In fact, we want to be creative so that we can hang few more rewards around our ego, so the ego can become more famous, so that you can say, I am somebody special, I am a great poet or a great composer or a great author or something. And that's the greatest problem to be faced by any creator, that he has to drop his ego. And it is for the ego in the beginning that you want to be creative. It is a very paradoxical process. You have to drop the very ego that was the impetus in the beginning, that wanted to be famous, that wanted to leave its name resounding down the corridors of time, that wanted to make history. That very same ego becomes the cause of stopping the flow of unknown energies in you. Otherwise, God is always pouring. You have just to be open, available. You are not to be separate. It hurts in the beginning. It hurts more if you are resisting. If you are not resisting, it hurts less. If you are not resisting at all, it hurts not. Then dropping the ego can be one of the joyous acts. That's what sannyas is all about. The whole message is based on this single phenomenon, dropping the ego joyously. It is not a question of surrendering your ego to me. Ego is not something that you can surrender. It is just a fiction. It is not a reality. So when the master says, surrender your ego to me, he is simply giving you a device. Because you live with the idea that ego is very substantial. He knows it is nothing. So he says, surrender it to me. Give it to me. And you be free of it. Not that you are giving anything. There is nothing to give. Not that he is receiving anything. There is nothing to receive. But to help you to get rid of a false notion, a device is created. Once you have dropped the idea, suddenly you will see the whole thing, that nothing has been given, nothing has been taken. You are the same, only the old wrong notion has disappeared. People are very reluctant in surrendering. Just the other day, one sannyasin wrote to me that I can do everything you are saying, but I cannot surrender. Then how can you do everything that I am saying? That is the first thing that I am saying. And he says, I can do everything that you are saying, but I cannot surrender. And he is thinking, he is making a very clear statement. That is the only thing that I am saying, surrender the ego. And it is not a question of surrendering to me. Surrender it to a tree. But surrender. Surrender to the river. Go and drown it into the river. Burn it. Cremate it. Bury it. Do whatsoever you want to do. But be finished with it. I am not interested in collecting your egos. What I will do with so many egos? If you are suffering with one so much, I will be in seventh hell with so many egos. I am not an ego collector. It is just a device, a simple device. You say, where I can put my ego? I say, okay, you give it to me. Because I know there is nothing to give, but you will be happy in giving it. At least you will feel great that you have surrendered. At least you have given your ego in the right hands. But the sannyasin says, I cannot surrender. And particularly people coming from the West find it very difficult. This is something which has to be understood. The Western education, the Western psychology, all emphasize ego. They all emphasize, enhance the ego, strengthen the ego. In different names, the ego is strengthened, willpower. It is nothing but another name for ego. The whole idea is that man has to have an ego of steel, unbendable, strong, rock-like, hard, because life is a constant struggle for survival. You have to fight. You have to conquer. Even a man like Bertrand Russell writes a book on science and calls it Conquest of Nature. The whole idea, the Western idea, is how to conquer. Even nature has to be conquered. And who are you? Part of nature. A part is trying to conquer the whole. It is like your left hand trying to conquer your whole body. Is it possible? It is ridiculous. Science has not conquered nature. But in the very effort of conquering it, it has destroyed much. In the East, we have a totally different idea. The nature has to be understood. The law, what Buddha calls Dhamma, the fundamental law of life, has to be understood so that you can be in tune with it. Not a question of conquering, but being in step with it. being in harmony with it. To be harmonious with nature is to be blissful. If the West has lost all bliss, all peace, nobody is responsible except this stupid idea of conquering nature. Nature has not to be conquered. But the same idea persists in many ways in science. Even so-called religious people go on talking about willpower. Hundreds of books have been written on willpower. A sheer wastage. And not only a wastage, but poisoning people's minds. People like Dale Carnegie and Napoleon Hill go on poisoning. How to win friends and influence people. But the idea deep down is the same. How to win. How to influence. Napoleon Hill has written a book, Think and Grow Rich. And what is the secret of growing rich? When you think, you will find it is willpower. The whole secret, the magic secret is willpower. But willpower is only another name for ego power. And ego is important. There is no power in it. So people go on struggling unnecessarily, fighting with each other, competing with each other. And the end result is that everybody is miserable. Hence, for the Western mind, it seems very difficult to surrender. And the situation is not better in the East either. In the East, for thousands of years, it has been taught that surrender is the key. So people are very easily ready to surrender. So easily ready that it has become a simple formality. It has no significance. The Eastern man can touch the feet of the master with no intention of surrender. He touches the feet of each and everybody. That is just formal. It is like shaking hand. It does not mean anything. It is like saying hello. It has no meaning in it. It is formal. It is a kind of greeting to elderly people, to anybody who is respected by others, to anybody who is known as religious, holy, saintly. People touch the feet of their father, their mother, their elderly relatives. It is just a conditioning. So the Eastern person is in a different difficulty. His difficulty is he does not know what surrender is. He has not ego enough to surrender. And the Western man has too much ego, hence feels resistant. But on the whole, the Western man is in a better position. Because if he understands the point And if he consciously surrenders the ego, his surrender goes far more deeper than the Eastern man surrenders. That is my experience of thousands of sannyasins from the East and from the West. The Western sannyasin's surrender is far more total. Of course, it is difficult for him. It takes longer for him. But whenever it happens, it really happens. The Eastern man's surrender takes no time. He is always willing. He is ready. Even before you have asked. But it does not change him. He has been touching so many people's feet. In fact, he has started feeling a new subtle kind of ego, that I am so humble, that I am ready to surrender. I am so surrendered. But that I persist now in a far more subtle way. You ask me, Sarva, why is creativity so painful? It is because of the ego. And then there are other problems also. If you are too knowledgeable, it will be difficult for you to be creative. In Zen, they have an ancient tradition. They say if you want to become a painter, for 12 years learn the technique as perfectly as possible, how to paint. And then for 12 years, forget all about the technique and painting. Do something else. Turn your back to painting completely. Forget all about it, as if you have nothing to do with it. And then, one day, start painting again. This is something significant. For 12 years you have to learn the technique. Because without the technique, your painting will be childish. But if it is just the technique, then technically it will be perfect. But it will not have any life. It will not be creative. So you have to learn the technique, let it soak in, and then forget all about it. So it becomes part of your blood, of your bones, of your marrow. And then after 12 years, one day suddenly start painting again. Now you don't know the technique. In a way you know. Existentially, it has become part of you. It is no more knowledge. So your painting will not be just technical. And it will not be childish either. First learn the technique and then unlearn the technique. Only then, one day, creativity explodes. First learn the technique how to dance, then forget all about technique and become spontaneous. Then only. And there are two types of people. One who will think there is no need to learn the technique. I want to be a creative person, not a technician. Then their painting, their music, their dance will remain just a childish effort, amateurish, cannot be of much value. And then there are the opposite people who will learn the technique as much as they can, and then they are caught in the technique. They paint perfectly, but something is missing. The soul is missing. The spirit is missing. It is a dead corpse. So you have to drop all knowledgeability. you have to unlearn. So again you can become fresh, innocent. And thirdly, if you are trying to be creative for a certain hidden motive, you will never find the right direction for your energies. Because if painters are famous, then there will be many painters. For example, in France, many painters. In India, you will not find so many painters. But many saints. Just whatsoever is the fashion. In France, painting is fashionable. The people who are thought to be intelligent should be painters. In India, they should be saints. The same fools. If they were born in France, they would be painting. In India, the same fools have become saints. In different countries, it is different. The fashion. In different times, it is different. For example, in India, no saint will ever think of painting. But in Japan, all the saints try to paint. They learn calligraphy and painting. Just the fashion. When you are living according to a certain fashion, prevalent, that simply means you want to be famous. You want to be accepted by the tradition and the people. You are not inquiring what are your real potentials. You are far more interested in what are other people's opinion. You have to drop that too. Don't be worried about other people's opinion. You simply find out what feels good for you. Nobody may ever appreciate it. So what? You may not become famous. So what? Don't be worried about it. The reward is not in being famous. The reward is in being involved, totally involved in creativity. The reward in the act itself, it is not beyond the act. It is not after the act. It is not when you have painted the painting and people have appreciated and it is being exhibited all over the world. No. The reward is when you are painting it, when you are utterly absorbed in it. That silence, that joy, that energy, that moment when you are not and God is, that is the reward. The fourth question. Bhagwan, what happens? I am an Italian and yet not enlightened. Anand Sravan It is enough to be an Italian. Enlightenment is no more needed. Enlightenment is for others who are not Italians. You have the first prize. That is the second prize. You should not be greedy for that. To be an Italian is such a great phenomenon. That's why no Italian has ever become enlightened. And I don't think it is ever going to happen. For the simple reason that Italians are born enlightened. You drop this greed. What you will do with enlightenment? Spaghetti is enough. Enjoy it to your heart's content. Leave enlightenment to poor Indians. They don't have anything else. That's why in India so many enlightened people have happened. When you don't have anything else, at least you can have enlightenment. And enlightenment needs few things which are basically missing in the Italians. It needs intelligence. Where you are going to get it? It is not a commodity. You cannot find it in the marketplace. You cannot purchase it. It is not available in the outside world. And Italians are utterly extroverted. And enlightenment happens somewhere inside. It needs great understanding. And Italians are very skillful in misunderstanding. One summer in New York, a gorilla had escaped from a traveling circus. As Bronzini was walking down Broadway, the ape suddenly appeared and sidled up beside the Italian. An astonished police officer, directing traffic, rushed over to the unusual sight of Bronzini and the gorilla. "Hey," said the cop, "what are you doing with that ape?" "I don't know," said Bronzini. "He just come up and take a walk with me." "You better take that ape to the zoo." "Okay, boss." said the Italian. The next day, the same policeman spotted Brandzini and the gorilla walking hand in hand along Park Avenue. The cop was livid. Just a minute, he shouted to Brandzini, "I told you yesterday to take that ape to the zoo." "I did," said the Italian. "And he liked it so much, today I am a take him to the moving picture show." Italians are so earthly. They are pure Zorbas. Except me. Nobody is going to accept them as sannyasins. But I love to do absurd things. I want to do this miracle to make few Italians enlightened. There is not much hope. I am hoping against hope. But there is nothing to lose. They need a good try. They are very bodily people. Utterly bodily. The Romans have always been. The most bodily people on the earth. That has a beauty of its own. Because the people who think they are spiritual become in many ways eccentric, crazy, insane, very egoistic, of course, in a very pious way. They are always thinking themselves they are holier than thou. And they become wishy-washy. They talk about great things, but their life becomes ugly. That has happened to the East. They talk about God, and the bread and the butter is missing. And without bread and butter, there is no God, no possibility of a God. So nothing is wrong in being bodily. One should be rooted in the body. One should be a Zorba. But one should not remain stuck there. One should go a little higher. Zorba should also become a Buddha. Then there is fulfillment. Both are fulfilled, the body and the soul. Italians are too much bodily people. And they are stuck there. Grenaldi's wife had just died. And he was making an awful scene at the graveside. Over and over he kept tearing at his hair and yelling, "What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do? The Paris priest gently took Grenaldi's arm and tried to console him. My son, I know you have suffered a terrible loss, but you will get over it in time, he said, leading Grenaldi away from the cemetery. What I am gonna do? Wailed Grenaldi. What I am gonna do? Try to control yourself, said the priest. Months will pass, you will get over your grief, and then in a year or two, you will meet some fine young woman and marry her, and everything will be fine. Eh, father, I know all that, said the Italian. But what am I gonna do tonight? The Italians have to be freed from their too much body orientation. Enlightenment is the ultimate flowering of consciousness. It can happen only when you are rooted in the body. But it cannot happen only with the body. You have to move inwards. You have to transcend the body too. Your roots should be in the body and your wings should be in the soul. Shravan, don't be worried. It has not happened yet, but it can happen. There are so many Italians here. Their surrender is more deeper than anybody else. Their commitment is also deeper than anybody else. For the first time, so many Italians are trying to move deeper into meditation. Something is bound to happen out of it. But they find something in me that they cannot find anywhere else. They can find a connection with me because I am not against the body. I am not against anything. I don't think that there is any problem if you love spaghetti. You can still be spiritual. There is no antagonism. For me, even sex and samadhi are related together. For me, gossiping and gospels are not different. Somewhere deep down, aspects of the same coin. Hence they find a deep affinity with me. They cannot be interested in any other spiritual man. But I am not an spiritual man in the ordinary sense. I am a whole man. I am not holy. Locatelli Svensson and O'Hara were sitting in the corner saloon. "There is no doubt about it," said Svensson. "Italian broads are the greatest." "Eh," agreed O'Hara. "I would like to spend a nice long weekend with Gina, Lolo, Brigida." "Me," said Svensson, "I will take Sophia Lorena." "That's nice," said Locatelli, "but I wanna Virginia Pipolina." "Never heard of her," said Svensson. "Who is she?" asked O'Hara. "Why, she is just the greatest Italian girl of them all. She even make the headlines in a newspaper," said Locatelli. "See here, it is on a page 1. And there was a heading, 5 die laying Virginia pipeline. "Don't be worried, Shravan. I am here to help you. This time maybe you cannot escape. So many Italians are caught in the net. Few of them are bound to become Buddhas. Don't be worried. Enlightenment is going to happen to many people. Italians included." And the last question. "Bhagwan, and what about the Pollocks?" "Purnananda, my God, are you a Pollock?" "I was aware that one of my sannyasins, Anando, is a Pollock. But I was not talking about Pollocks. Because one Pollock cannot do much. But two Pollocks are too much. Then there is danger. Pollocks are great people. Even greater than the Italians. Italians are nothing compared to the Pollocks. You see, they were searching for a pope they could not find in Italy. They had to choose a Pollock. If you are searching for a fool, you have to go to Poland. Swami Anando has contributed this authentic letter from his Polish mother. "Dear son, just a few lines to let you know that I be still alive. I writing this letter slowly because I know you not able to read fast. You won't know the house when you get home. We moved. There be a washing machine in the house when we move in, but it not working too good. Last week I put 14 shirts into it, pull the chain, and I not see that shirt since. Your sister Hannah had baby this morning. I not find out yet whether it be boy or girl. so I not know whether you be an aunt or an uncle. Your uncle Leopold drowned last week in a vat of whiskey. Some of the men dived in to save him, but he fired them off hard. We cremated his body, but it took 3 days to put out the fire. Your father not have much to drink at Christmas. I put a bottle of castor oil in his pint of beer. It keep him going until New Year's Day. It only rained twice last week, first for 3 days and then for 4 days. Try to learn write me soon. Your loving mother, XXX. P.S. I be going to send you $10, but I already sealed the envelope. Pollocks are great people. More Pollocks are needed here. But it is difficult for poor Pollocks to come because their country is dominated by the communists. Just few days before I have received a letter that they would like to start a center somewhere in Poland. They would like the center to remain hidden. I don't think they will be able to manage it. They even want to become sannyasins, but they will be caught. In Russia, there are few sannyasins. They cannot wear orange, they cannot wear the mala, but they have been managing well. They have their malas, they have made arrangements how the malas can reach to them. Now this letter from Poland, they want malas and they want books, but they have not given their address. Johnson went to the zoo to see Samson and Lionel billed as the two most vicious lions in the world. There was no doubt about Samson, the smaller one, for if even a feather came within reach, he would pounce on it and rip it to shreds. But Lionel, the other larger lion, did nothing but lie against some rocks, licking between his hind legs. Johnson asked the zookeeper how come Lionel was advertised as being so savage, even though he is just lying there licking his sensitive areas. Explained the zookeeper, Lionel is more ferocious than the other one. In fact, not 20 minutes ago he ate a pollock that fell into the cage. Then why is he licking himself like that? Ah, said the zookeeper, he is trying to get the taste out of his mouth. Purnananda, meet Anando, try to find out, there may be few other Polaks also trying to hide themselves. Because they know once they are known, I will be after them. Now you can declare whosoever is a Polak, because I will be after them anyhow. So you can declare whoever is a Polak. You can make a small society of the Polaks. In the new commune, it will be good to have small communities, separate communities of Italians, Polaks, of Germans. There will be few difficulties. Guyan wrote to me this morning that, Bhagwan, you may not be knowing, but now I have to tell you that I am half Italian. The fault was my father's. He was Italian and half German. The fault is of my mother's. She was German. There will be difficulty for people like Guyan. But we can make arrangements. They can live on the boundary line. Half in the Italian commune and half in the German commune. And I don't think there will be people who are German and Italian and Polak, all three. That will be difficult, very difficult. Miss Jabriskie walked into a physician's office and said, I would like to get a vaccination. Miss, said the MD, I think what you are talking about is a vaccination. Eh, said the police girl, and I don't want you to give it to me on my arm because I wear a sleeveless nightgown. You mean a sleeveless nightgown? And I don't want it on my thigh because I have a Juchini bathing suit. You mean bikini? And I don't want you to vaccinate me on my Virginia. You mean vagina? All right, shouted the girl. Virginia, vagina, just as long as I don't get smallpox. Enough for today.